You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello. Welcome back to Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. Today, I'm talking to Molly Huddleston, someone who has probably interviewed at least one of your favorite bands. Since 2011, she's been writing about music, first for Circles and Soundwaves, a blog she created, and more recently for Substream Magazine, with plenty of other outlets along the way. But most of this discussion centers around her brand new book, I Told You I Hated New York. This compilation encapsulates a 9-year period and highlights her journey of self-discovery and growth. Journal entries are interspersed with previously published articles on music, life, and where they intersect, with a bit of poetry for good measure. Please enjoy this conversation and check out not just I Told You I Hated New York, but all the great stuff Molly is doing.
Like, you kind of start the book by talking about, like, your love of Harry Potter and and like writing fiction and like how you started out doing that. And I'm curious about, like, just like the roots of that, of like the love of storytelling and also like the transition into music and how that happened.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it happened, you know, I always was like a big reader when I was a kid. But I guess the Harry Potter series, and you know, I'll state I'm aware of, you know, recent comments J.K. Rowling has made, and this story and the whole book was put together before all of that came out. But I, you know, that's not anything that I endorse. I don't support transphobia. But yeah, growing up, I mean, I think to me, like, Harry Potter, the whole series, it was so fascinating because it was like, you know, it was this like fantastical, magical story, but it also had all these elements of like being a kid and not being sure if you fit in, and romance and crushes, and, you know, being stressed out by schoolwork. And I guess that kind of just sparked something within me. There was a lot of fan fiction over the years, was how the fiction thing started. And as I got into music, you know, at first it was like, okay, I always thought music journalism was really cool. But like at first I got into music and, you know, probably eighth grade, like I got into Good Charlotte. That was, you know, like the band for me, still is, like sixth grade. And like by eighth grade, I was discovering other bands like Green Day and Yellow Card and Simple Plan and Blink-182. And I don't know, I started like paying attention to song lyrics and kind of wondering what the stories were behind them. And that got me just on a whole spiral of reading a whole lot of band interviews and record reviews and deciding that was the coolest thing in the world. And I had a few like kind of failed attempts at blogging, like stuff that lasted like maybe 2 weeks or something. Like literally like 2 weeks, like one of them was like a 5 days and one lasted like 2 weeks. And then sophomore year in college, I took a class called History of Rock and Roll. And it was an elective for me, you know, but I took that class and I was like, holy shit, I actually really enjoy writing about music. And, you know, one of our assignments was we had to interview someone. So I interviewed a singer-songwriter friend of mine. And I finished that class April 2011, and basically I wasn't done writing about music, and I figured nobody would hire me without, like, prior actual journalistic experience, and I didn't know anyone, you know, I didn't know other bloggers or anything at all, so I started Circles and Soundwaves.
Awesome, yeah, and you kind of, like, had mentioned all, like, the part of what drew you into Harry Potter were like the themes like surrounding the world, and you kind of it's interesting because I feel like you brought a lot of those similar themes into like this book, even though it's like nonfiction.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about that and how you kind of like developed that like personal writing style.
Well, thank you for noticing that, because I tried to do that. You know, it was important to me that the book kind of showed like my journey, I guess. You know, not just like career-wise, but kind of how that intertwines with who I am, like as an individual. In terms of a personal writing style, I mean, a lot of the stuff in the book was written, if not in the moment, like some of it was written literally whipping my phone out in the moment as something's happening, jotting stuff down on my phone. So, you know, a lot of it was written, you know, that night at, you know, I get home from a show in college and it's 1 a.m. but I just can't sleep, so I just write. You know, I just kind of like spill my feelings out. The poetry thing was something, you know, because there's a couple poems in there, and that was something that I would say was like generally more in the recent few years. But it's, I don't know, I think it was feeling like I had certain thoughts and feelings and experiences, and that was how I wanted to share them, like that those experiences and those stories were best told in poetry form. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting, like you mentioned, kind of like wanting to show the like your journey and the, exactly, like the kind of growth throughout it's I like that it was kind of like chronological, that it is chronological like that. And you do kind of like get to see that along the way for sure.
Exactly. And that was important to me, you know, that it was chronological. And like, I had some ideas that were like, okay, well maybe I do like one or two pieces from each year and make it like a stricter thing like that. But yeah, I wanted to show that it was chronological, because I think kind of an overarching theme of the book is sort of self-growth, I guess. And to me, like looking at things chronologically is like a really important way to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And as far as like putting the book together, how did you kind of like comb through everything, and like how much of it did you have in mind beforehand, and how much of it did you kind of like discover along the way?
So the title poem, the poem I told you I hated New York, that one, I mean, as soon as I wrote that in the fall of 2018, I was like, okay, if I ever do a book like this, that's going to be the title and sort of the centerpiece in a way. There were a few pieces that, you know, like the coffee grinder piece kind of relates to that in a way. And so I was like, okay, well, I have to put that in there. But really it was just sitting at my computer and scrolling through old journals and old like private Tumblr posts and scrolling through and reading through stuff over several weeks, you know, and going through all those archives. And, you know, I had lists and lists and lists. And then I kind of whittled it down based on, I guess, what I felt best represented, like experiences I wanted to show in the book. You know, like I have the piece Get Off the Stage, which talks about, in a way, talks about like body image. And then later in the book, I have the piece about the Free Throw album that also talks about body image, but kind of in a way that I think shows a lot of, at least like self-awareness and like, you know, a different way of looking at it. So like, I felt like it was important to have those two pieces that kind of showcased each other. Yeah, so just wanting to like represent different periods, but it was a fun process looking through a lot of old stuff from over the years.
For sure, yeah. And was it like, did those themes kind of start to, like the connections between the pieces, did you kind of like realize that they were going to be there from the start, or did they kind of like pop out to you as you were, you know, recounting like everything that you were going through?
I mean, some of them, like, you know, I mentioned the title poem and the coffee grinder piece, like those I had written about the same situation. So that was like a very obvious kind of connection. But I think some of them, like the connection sort of developed and I saw it more as I put things together, like, you know, kind of starting off talking a lot about local music and then how it evolved into other things I did, and but I still have like that love and that ties to things locally. So yeah, I guess it was a mix, you know. Some of the connections were like pretty obvious to me, and some of them I think developed a little later on in the process.
Yeah, and you mentioned kind of like how a lot of the stuff was, you know, like private blog posts or like journal entries and stuff like that. So how was that? How like is the writing process for you? I mean, I know you mentioned a lot of it's kind of like in the moment, but I'm curious, like how I feel like they fit very well into like the kind of like anthology style, kind of like article style. And like, so how did that kind of, is that like always how you've written, or is that kind of like, were they somewhat adapted or anything for the book?
I mean, there were, you know, the only edits that I really made, you know, obviously like I checked things over for grammar, punctuation, spelling. And, you know, in the case of like, there were one or two instances where I was like, okay, you know, I mention like a personal detail about someone else that for the sake of their privacy, I'm going to remove. But I mean, the format of stuff, no, I didn't change. It just, you know, I tend to like a lot of these pieces, I would kind of take notes on like notes throughout the night on my phone or whatever, and then get back either late that night or the next day and just write and spill it out and no filter essentially. But no, obviously there were like minor edits here and there. But no, in terms of like the format of the pieces, nothing was changed. And that was also important to me, right? Because I wanted it to feel very genuine, not just to who I am now, but to who I was as I was experiencing everything that I talk about in the book.
Yeah. And you just mentioned like the idea of like taking notes down, kind of, which I feel like sounds more like a, you know, like your typical school thing, like, oh, writing down an outline before you get your first draft.
Sure.
Like, where's that kind of like drive to write in that way like come from for you?
Just a need to say it. I actually saw this YouTube video a few weeks ago that kind of hit a little too close to home, but this YouTube video basically said that like a lot of people who write do it because they are just trying to connect with people. And for me, like writing stuff like this is, if not how I connect with people, like how I process my thoughts. And it's just such a like need to do it that I don't know. I guess I'm like, okay, I want to remember things, and they might seem like a small detail, but like I want to get it down because it's important to me.
Yeah, and as someone who's like, you know, talked to so many artists and done so many interviews, do you find like parallels between like that drive for you and like the drive for others to like make music?
Oh, that's a good question. What I found really cool is that a lot of musicians, and I've interviewed like hundreds of musicians, which is like an insane thing to say. a lot of, you know, they all have kind of different processes, right? You know, some people are very in the moment, or a band is like, okay, we hash out this song in 30 minutes and like we'll work out the kinks later. Some people are more methodical. But I do find it, like, I find it really interesting to learn about, you know, the writing process, not just like what inspired something, but yeah, like the writing process and how does something go from like an idea of this is a thing I want to talk about in a song, or this is the thing I want to express in a piece of writing. How do you go from that to like a finished piece of work?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's definitely something that always interests me. And I feel like sometimes it almost gets like redundant asking that to like so many different people, but there's always such a different answer that at the same time, it's like they haven't heard all the other interviews you've done.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, for many years, I would ask every artist I interviewed, how do you respond to haters? And I asked that question of so many different people, and I got so many different answers. And you know, after a point I was like, okay, I don't want to make this like a default thing anymore. I just decided to. But yeah, like I don't know. Sometimes like a good question is a good question, even if it's something you can't ask a bunch of people.
Yeah, for sure. And so I guess I'll flip it around on you and ask, how have you responded to haters either in life or through like your writing?
I mean, some of it's hard, right? Obviously, like, you know, like in a piece in the book, I talk about people, you know, saying some very nasty things to me. And it's hard, but you know, I didn't want to let that stop me from enjoying shows. So I kept going to shows. In terms of my writing, I mean, yeah, I got a few like anonymous messages on like Formspring or something about, you know, some interview I did that I guess it was a pretty big artist. I'm not going to say who, but an interview I did. And like, apparently I had some like inaccuracies and I got some like nasty messages. And I don't respond to those. But, you know, for people like, I mean, going way back to like way before I was a music journalist, like I never did well in English classes in high school. And to me, you know, those people, they weren't haters, but like they super doubted that like I could ever be a writer. And to me, it's like I just continue working hard and doing it. For the most part, though, you know, I don't like to engage if someone says anything like super mean online, but you know, that's the great thing is you can always delete comments or like report posts and stuff, which helps, I guess.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about kind of like the idea of like the growth that you've seen in yourself throughout the book.
Yeah.
How would you say like the way you respond to that kind of like criticism has changed in like the time frame that the book covers?
I mean, when I was in college and kind of starting out, you know, I think I took things more to heart. And I think that was because in a lot of ways, probably I wasn't totally sure of myself yet. And I wasn't sure of like, you know, did I have a place in music? Could I ever make a career out of this? So whenever I got like criticisms or anything, like I took it more to heart. Now, you know, I'm feeling like more established in a lot of ways. And so I'm more secure. So, I mean, it still bothers me. Like, it doesn't bother me as much, definitely not. But, you know, I think being more secure and realizing that, like, I don't need to have clout or I don't need to have so-and-so's approval unless they're the ones that are going to hire me. I don't really care about another person's approval. And just, you know, realizing like what actually matters, and that was doing, you know, doing great work and making relationships and everything.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that kind of makes sense to hear from you, considering the fact that like, you know, you kind of just went for it and like started Circles and Sound Waves and like, you know, all that stuff. So I think that's, you know, like I said, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Cool.
And as far as, I guess, kind of like switching over more to the positive, like a lot of the book kind of deals with, like the way that like the musical community, like the way what you found in the musical community and the way that it like has made you feel and like improved your life and stuff. So I was wondering, could you talk like about that and kind of like how it's, you know, changed who you are as a person?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say that like when I was in, I mean, really for the most part, like I had a few friends in middle school. I had no friends in high school, you know, none. Like, you know, I had some friends from summer camp, but I was really lonely. And I got bullied and stuff, you know. And I remember being nervous about going to college and, you know, frustrated when like I encountered some mean people in college at the start, but I found music. And, you know, since I've you know, maybe I have different opinions in some ways since, but like, you know, finding music for me, it was cool to like discover so many new bands, that there was this whole like world that I didn't know about. And to know that like I had a place that I could go where I could have fun, you know, I could do something that people valued, you know, photographing their band, interviewing and stuff. On a very real level, it taught me like social skills. Like, I used to be so scared to go up to strangers, and interviewing bands, you know, it helped me get really good at having conversations with people. And it's like, oh shit, I have to go up to someone that is like, at first they were mostly older than me, and now that's not necessarily true anymore, but when I was 19, most of the people were older than me, more successful than me, you know, people I admired, and I would have to like get them to open up and talk about things that maybe they hadn't talked about before. And of course that's, you know, nerve-wracking when you start, but then I realized I was pretty good at it, and that gave me a lot of self-confidence, and it led to, you know, even when I started working with PETA a few years, you know, when I was kind of finishing up college, I had the confidence to approach strangers at a concert and talk about PETA. So it gave me a lot of confidence and the ability to have a good conversation, and in some ways friends, you know, but a lot of my friends still are people that I've met through music, even if they don't work in the industry, people that I know from like shows. But it, you know, gave me the knowing that there was a place I could, you know, kind of belong or be myself, and the, you know, the realization that like, I don't need any, eventually the realization that I don't need anyone's like clout or support or whatever, that I can kind of do my own thing, even if not quote unquote cool.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of like mentioned the way you're talking is kind of like, the like burst of discovery and like the music writing kind of went hand in hand. Can you talk a little bit about like that and how that came together for you?
Yeah. I mean, well, in terms of discovery, so like summer 2011, when I was like really getting into music, that was when Spotify came to the US. So that was a very good time to get started as a music writer, because it was like, holy shit, I can listen to anything. Oh my God, this is so cool. And first, it started by, you know, wanting to see this local band that I had met outside of some other show I was going to, and then finding out what other local bands they were playing with. And then, okay, this local band is like opening up for Transit. You know, I saw Transit in like 2011. That was one of the first shows I shot. Actually, Transit was like the first touring band I shot. You know, and I went there because a local band I had started to become friends with was opening. And then from there, it's like, okay, you see Transit and you find Man Overboard, and you know, you see what other bands, like who they're touring, and, oh, this band is on this label, and this band is on that label, and, you know, sometimes it's, in latter years, definitely recommendations from friends have become more, but I think at first it was a lot of just, like, okay, who's on what label, and, like, who is playing shows with who, starting out that.
Yeah, and you were talking, like, it's really interesting to me, like you mentioned Spotify, and then you also mentioned like the local bands, and like that happening so organically in that way. Like, what would you say played like a bigger role for you, like the internet or like real life?
I think at first real life, for music discovery, especially in terms of like kind of the pop punk and emo and alt scene, real life and friends and stuff like that. In recent years, I've definitely discovered a lot of stuff through Spotify as I've gotten more excited about like the curated playlists and things like that.
And as far as like the personal growth that we've been talking about and your growth as like a music journalist, how would you compare like the two, the like internet versus real life?
I think real life, you know, obviously it's nice when there's like clout on the internet, but you know, in terms of like growing as a music journalist, I mean, I will say that like, as I've kind of become more confident and sure of myself and comfortable with myself as a person, I felt more okay with like saying what I want to say about an artist and writing about the artist I want to write about. Right. So that has been huge. And it's just a lot of, with that, it's just doing a lot of interviews and a lot of stories and a lot of reviews and just doing it and trying to like, you know, dissect what I've done, what worked and what didn't, and like trying to fix those things, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of the personal growth, I think it's definitely real life, you know? And obviously, like I said, you know, music journalism and finding that was huge, but, you know, it was a lot of other things too, you know, getting professional help, you know, for mental health over the years and surrounding myself with people who are good people and who care about me and who are, you know, going to be in my corner, I think has been huge. But, you know, a lot of it, I think, has just been knowing that I can exist. This is going to be, like, I guess pretty deep, but just learning that I can exist in the world and, like, regardless of whatever I'm doing or whatever my job title is or what, you know, whatever money I'm making, that, like, I still have value as a person outside of my day job or my music journalism or anything. So definitely, like, in terms of my personal growth, definitely real life.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of something you especially hit on like towards the end of the book, just mm-hmm. kind of like as you're wrapping up Circles and Sound Waves and like preparing yeah. to like leave Substream. So how has that like journey been for you, kind of figuring out how to define yourself outside of those things?
Yeah, I mean, leaving Circles and Sound Waves or ending that, it was like nerve-wracking, but I was kind of like, okay, you know, like I did this and I was like excited to kind of, you know, be focusing on Substream and whatever other freelance things. Leaving Substream, I would say, was much weirder because for the first time in 8.5 years, I didn't just have an outlet that I was writing for all the time. And it you know, it's been weird and it's like, oh my God, I have all this like space in my brain to think about other things. You know, it's been weird. And it's, you know, in the few weeks, so in October, I interviewed the early November and I was kind of waiting to hear back about this Simple Plan interview, but it wasn't confirmed yet. So there was like kind of a 2-week period where I just felt like I was in the biggest limbo. And I baked like 4 different kinds of bread. So I was just like, all right, I just need to like be doing something. And you know, meanwhile, I was working on the book and getting the book together. I mean, it has been weird, you know? And I have one freelance piece, which was an interview with Kevin from Walk the Moon, which was absolutely insane, that went up last week. Like, that was insane. You know, I love Walk the Moon. They're like one of my absolute favorites, you know, and I'm doing a YouTube channel, but that has been like for fun, you know, and I'm like really trying to approach that as this is my thing I'm doing for fun. I'm not, at least right now, I'm not treating that like a serious thing or like a career potential. And it has been weird, and I'm not going to say it hasn't been weird, but you know, it's been good. I would say. It's definitely weird though, because it's like I still think of myself as like a music journalist and I hope to do it more, but I'm kind of figuring out like what role freelancing is going to play in my life. I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think that makes a lot of sense. And as far as like kind of like when you made the decision to make those changes, what were kind of like the factors that went into that for you?
Sure. So when I was ending Circles and Sound Waves, I mean, 2017, I had a very crazy year. I had knee surgery. I, for a while, was working 2 jobs. I was working for PETA, and then I was working my current full-time job in video promo. And I was doing a podcast for a minute. I was going to physical therapy for my knee several times a week. And I was like working events for PETA, and I was trying to do Circles and Sound Waves stuff, and I had just started at Substream, but I kind of was starting to feel like, okay, I was starting to feel like I had done whatever I was going to do with Circles and Sound Waves. And that was how I felt, but I wrestled with it for a while, because it was probably April 2017 when I first started thinking about that, right? And, you know, then it was, I started thinking about that like more and more, that, you know, towards the end of that year. And then January 2018, I went up to Buffalo to see Pentimento, and that felt like a really good kind of closing chapter, I guess, because it was like, this is a band that's meant so much to me and so much to what Circles and Soundwaves was. Mm-hmm. And it, I don't know. I was there and I was at that show and I was like, I told them, and they were the first people I told, I was like, this is the last thing I'm doing for Circles and Soundwaves. Mm-hmm. And then it was like the next weekend I called Logan, like middle of the afternoon. I was like, I just wanted to tell you, just, you know, Logan also being from Ohio and also having, you know, done a similar music blog, we've always had that in common, so we've always been really close friends. So I just called in the middle of the afternoon and I was like, I'm ending Circles and Soundwaves. And yeah, I like, you know, I emailed my contributors and then I put the post up on the website a couple days later. Substream was, you know, it's funny because I think the decision to leave Substream was a little, it came quicker. I don't want to say easier because it wasn't easy. It, you know, last year I did some amazing things. I mean, I think either today or tomorrow, but like this week marks a year since like I got to go to Atlantic Records and I interviewed Wallows and I interviewed Swimmers. Mm-hmm. And they were both like just such great interviews. And we did like little brief photo shoots and it was so cool. I interviewed Simple Plan last year, right? You know,
yeah.
I did, and I was feeling really great about my writing and I was making all these relationships with major labels and just feeling so good about my writing. But it was, I mean, it was a lot, you know. I felt like I was always doing that, you know, and it was a lot. And I don't know, it kind of hit me in like mid end September. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I still want to do music writing in some way if I can, but you know, I just felt like I needed something new. And in a way, part of it was because I think I felt like, okay, I've done a lot of amazing things at Substream, but I think I was starting to feel like, okay, what's next for me?
Yeah.
So yeah. And that was definitely like a more, I don't know, it was like an easier decision to come to, but like when I ended Circles and Soundwaves, that was like really emotional. When I left Substream, it was kind of like, all right, you know, this is what I need to do. But leaving Substream felt like more of shit. Like, who am I? Like, what, yeah. What do I do with my life? What do I do with all my time now?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess because when you ended Circles and Soundwaves, you kind of had Substream to fill that void.
Sure. Exactly. And, you know, by the time I had announced I was leaving Substream, I was already working on the book. So I had that. And I feel like it kind of didn't really hit me until I had like put this book out. I was like, oh God. But I don't regret it. You know, it was what I needed to do. And I, you know, like I said, I'm still trying to figure out like what role freelancing is going to play in my life or, you know, what I want to do and how I can still do music writing in some way, but, you know, maybe make some kind of an income from it or what.
Yeah, for sure. I think it reminds me a lot of kind of like the process I was going through when I kind of had a period where I was not writing as much, or I would have an interview here and there and then take forever to kind of actually get myself to write it and stuff. And I was like,
yeah,
you know, just kind of having that, like, I know I want this to be part of my life in some way, but I need to figure out the way to like best fit it in. And lucky for me, like the podcast, like fills that void very well. And it's a much different like workflow in a way too.
Exactly. Yeah, and I thought about doing a podcast again. It is weird, and like I keep saying that, but it's weird, you know. But in a way, I think it's kind of good for me because I think part of the process for me was like, okay, music writing gave me like a lot of self-worth, right? Because this was something I was good at. So like, how do I find that like not just like identity, but like that worth, like that sense of like I'm good at something and I have value in the world, like how do I find that? So And I don't know if I have an answer to that. But I, you know, I'm still doing, obviously we're doing this, and have a couple other like press things for the book coming out, and I'm going to keep pushing it and doing reach outs. But yeah, I kind of am like, okay, like what do I do?
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that. I feel like, I don't know, you kind of need to have that existential crisis every once in a while, and then things fall back into place soon enough.
Totally. And like I said, you know, I had that Walk the Moon interview that I got to do that was so cool, and, you know, was a thing I got reached out for. Like, I was specifically reached out to.
Oh, wow,
to...
that's awesome.
It was, like, insane. Like, I got this reach out from an organization called I Voted, which basically helps to boost voter turnout by like letting fans into shows for free on election day if you like show a selfie from your polling place. So I'm like, what a great cause.
For sure.
And Kevin from Walk the Moon had joined their board, and you know, Emily, the woman that runs I Voted, reached out to me, and she was like, oh, Walk the Moon's label gave me your name. Because, you know, I had reviewed their last record, and I was in touch with her about like photo passes and stuff. And I was just like, what? Like, what?
Yeah, talk about validation and self-worth,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what? Like, that's insane. Like, so I was like, holy shit. Like, thank you. Yes. And that was insane. And like, I did that interview in my car. And like, I was on my way. I was going down the shore to meet a friend for dinner. And the interview, like, I would have to basically stop halfway. So I stop. I pull over in a parking lot, and the radio is playing Shut Up and Dance as I'm like pulling up and looking over my notes one last time. And I'm like, all right, this is like really good timing.
For sure.
But it's also, and not to say that like, oh, like I have a, because there's still so many artists that I love and that I would love to interview. But like, there's also part of me that's like, okay, like I have kind of interviewed a whole lot of my favorite bands. Mm-hmm. You know, Good Charlotte and Simple Plan and Walk the Moon and Yellow Card, and I interviewed Wallows, which was insane. I interviewed Missio, who are a group I love. I interviewed Elon Rubin about the new regime, and he's in Angels and Airwaves, who I also love, you know. I feel like I've done a lot of amazing things, and I wouldn't say I'm done in any way, but it's like, okay, cool. Like I've done some very, very cool things.
Yeah, for sure. I think like one of the last pieces in the book was kind of like saying like how crazy is it that those things that you always like dreamed of kind of like became routine.
And exactly.
I think that's something that's like really interesting to think about and like really awesome too.
Yeah. And I, you know, when I was, so I had this Simple Plan thing, the Simple Plan interview. And I remember thinking like, I had already started putting the book together, and then the Simple Plan interview got confirmed. And I was kind of like, okay, I need this last piece needs to be about Simple Plan. Right, like it needs to be about, because what a perfect way to end this book, right? It's my last thing for Substream, and it's just such a good like things coming full circle kind of moment. And I tried to, yeah, you know, I wanted to reflect on like not just okay, I love this band, but doing this thing is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm curious, like, what has the process been for you of kind of like switching back to just being a fan versus like having that kind of like writer mentality, even when it's like about music that you love?
Sure. I mean, and I still have, I think, the writer mentality, because I think for me, the writer mentality is just like who I am, right? Like I think about music and I like to talk about it. I still am like discovering like so many new artists. I think I told you about Bo Bescoro. I feel like I mentioned him to you at one point.
Yeah,
but like, he was a recent discovery. Conan Gray was a recent discovery. Not an underground artist by any means, but Dua Lipa and Ed Sheeran, I've like gotten into both of those artists like super recently. You know, I'm still like discovering music all the time, constantly, and I think I always will be. And I feel like music journalism kind of like, in a way, sort of prompted me to do that, right? But it's been, you know, it's been nice. It's fun going to shows and just having fun, but I am like I'm itching to do a good interview. You know, there's some of the people I mentioned just now. I'm like, God, I have so many things I would ask them, you know? and I feel like I'm always going to think that, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why I started music journalism in the first place, was like, I had things I like wanted to ask bands, and I had things I wanted to say about music.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that feeling of just like curiosity.
I think a lot of people have curiosity, but sometimes people are content with, you know, satisfying that curiosity by reading an interview, and some people are more prompted to go do the interview.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. This is kind of just like a mixed bag question, but I'm curious, do you have like, were there any favorite pieces that you just couldn't quite fit into the book for one reason or another?
Yeah, well, one that I thought a lot about putting in the book was, there was a piece about Hodera's album First Things First. which I'm seeing them in like a month, and I'm so excited because that band is phenomenal. And I think my title for that article was like, it was an op-ed, and I said, on Hodera's First Things First and the nuances of being open and honest. And I basically start that piece by kind of talking about how I like try to be honest about my mental health, but like, what does that actually mean? And I, you know, it was a very like personal piece, kind of tying in the music with my feelings and really going into like the nuances of what it actually feels like when you're depressed or when you have anxiety or when you're like trying to get help. And I love that piece. Like, I love that piece. And I was like, but it didn't feel like it had kind of like a spot in the narrative of this book, I guess. It wasn't so much like a moment as like, okay, like here's like a whole big thing about like my mental health, right? So it was like a really strong piece, and it's something I'm still really proud of. It just didn't fit in the book.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting, because it kind of goes back to what we're talking about at the beginning about like the value that you place on like storytelling and stuff like that. So that's, I think it makes a lot of sense considering that stuff.
Exactly.
And then the last thing that I always like to ask people is either just for kind of like a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about like music or life or just whatever you kind of last thoughts you want to share.
I would say that if you want to write, just write and get off Twitter and stop reading articles telling you how to write, and just stop watching YouTube videos that tell you how to write, and stop listening to podcasts that tell you how to write, and just write. Do it, you know? Because I think you can get, and I can be like this too, that I get very caught up in the, how do I do things? But just advice for life, be yourself. I know that's like a piece of advice of all time, but I believe in authenticity, and that was a big thing from doing this book, that I was really authentic. Be yourself, say what you feel, even if it's not, say it with your actions, your words, and if anyone has a problem with it, who cares? Doesn't matter.
We have once again reached the end of the episode, and this one feels like more of a journey than most. I hope you enjoyed Molly's unique perspective and journey as a fan, a writer, and someone who is always looking to improve and find what comes next. Be sure to check out I Told You I Hated New York. The link to order is in the show notes. It's a quick and fun read with lots to think about and digest. Thanks so much to Molly for taking the time to talk so openly. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyInTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyInTheCallPod@gmail.com. Catch you all on the flippity flip. Fly on the call.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one hit thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.